And I was just thinking about our body and our whole process of reentry. We actually had a good friend last night who was in a store and she didn't have a mask on, and somebody accused her of being arrogant. And I thought, you know, it's interesting. You know, I get angry about stuff like that, okay? But God doesn't want me to get angry. He wants me to understand the fear. I've talked to, I don't know, hundreds of couples about, you know, when you're angry, there's always fear underneath, okay? So I was asking myself a question last night when I got angry, what's the fear that's underneath? And I think the fear that I have underneath is that we're observing the kind of the birthing of a new religion right before our eyes right now. And it's not like it's just popping up. It's been coming for a long time. And its expressions are starting to solidify in different ways. But we'll get into that, and we'll talk about that as we go through the letters. Our plan as a body, now that we're all back together, and you're always free to not sit by somebody you think might contaminate you. So if you feel like we need more chairs, let us know. We'll put more in here. But as we've talked about all along, the patient, wise, faith-filled reentry. Being patient with one another, because different people have different circumstances that they're experiencing. We have one family that's surrounded by newborns right now, so there are issues related to that. So we just want to be patient with one another as things unfold. Wise, you know, I'm washing my hands probably more than I ever have. I hadn't seen Azzy for a long time. She came over, and, you know, little kids are just like the embodiment of germs all over them. And so after I played with her yesterday for about 45 minutes, I went in and doused myself, you know, with the things that I needed to. But, you know, be wise. Be wise in what we do and as we greet one another. And I can see it as we're bumping into each other, and some people, we're kind of a naturally huggy kind of group, which I've never understood. How can you be a huggy group and not be a dancing group? I don't get it. I don't understand it. But, you know, those two things don't, you know, compute in our particular group of people. But being wise and just being respectful of one another, and then also having a faith-filled reentry. As I was mentioning earlier about courage, this is not a time for us to shrink back. So can we be wise and can we be faith-filled and still be courageous? I think we can, the way I understand the scriptures. And I don't know if this is encouraging to you. You can read the story. We got together with a few people last night and prayed, and when I got up this morning, I was thinking about the Philistines, and they were the Ashdodites. Okay, that was their that was the group of people within Philistia that was had the god Dagon. Okay, you ever heard of Dagon before? Yeah. Well, Dagon was the father of Baal. Okay, so that was kind of the roots, and then out of Dagon came Baal, and then the many faces of Baal and all of the idolatries of that part of the world and really beyond all came from Dagon. And I refreshed my memory on Dagon last night, and it's interesting. Dagon is an evolutionary god, okay? He's an evolutionary god. He was half fish, and he was half man, which made me think of Aquaman right away, but I'm not sure that's what they had in mind. But I thought the syncretism inside of who Dagon was and how that reflects on what we're experiencing now with what I'm beginning to term the birthing of a new religion. We'll see if that's true or not as things unfold. But Dagon, in the story, he's mentioned like three or four places. But if you want to read about him in 1 Samuel chapter 5. And it's so cool because they have this image of Dagon. And in the middle of the night, Dagon falls over. Lo and behold, I don't know if it was an earthquake. I don't know if it was an angel. I don't know what it was. But Dagon falls over, and all of the Ashdodites come in and they go, oh my gosh, you know, Dagon's laying flat on his face in our temple. And so what are you going to do? You're going to prop him back up, right? You put him back up on his throne. And they come back in the next day, and Dagon has fallen off again. But this time, his head has broken off of this image, and his hands have broken off. And it's the heads and the hands of any group of people or of any religion that makes the action. You know, you think it up here, and then the hands move. And we know the God who knocked Dagon down. We know the God who severed Dagon's head and severed his hands. And that makes me feel, as a believer, that I'm not stupid about my power, but I'm wildly optimistic about the power of God. So whatever you're experiencing right now, and whatever kind of things this is bringing out for you and your family and your life and your relationships, as well as your neighborhood and as well as the things that we see on television, whatever they might be, remember, you serve the God who has the power over all gods. And it doesn't matter what people think. It only matters what God thinks. And that includes me. It doesn't matter what I think. It's all about what God thinks. So that was encouraging to me related to the faith part of it. So we're reengaging our hard times like we did this morning. I don't know how you get kids to social distance, but apparently they're not in the high-risk group, so maybe you'll have to douse them down when they get home, too. I don't know. We're also reengaging our Evergreen kids' classes, and we've talked to teachers. Some teachers are available and willing, and some people aren't, so we're adjusting to that. And that's okay, you know, however long it takes to bring us back into phase. And the slide that Andy showed this morning is basically for parents, is to say, okay, here's your age group. This is what we're going to talk about. And that was kind of a plan, like a few months ago, we were going to head in that direction to where we could have as much harmony between what was happening at home and what we're trying to support with here at the Creek. And we got camps coming up, and, you know, again, another opportunity to probably be around lots of germs, and but at least we'll be outdoors, right? I'm gonna be outdoors the whole time. So you can be praying about that. We're really excited and optimistic about what God wants to do. We've had some really good camps the last few years from a solid spiritual perspective. So you can pray about that. Where we're going to head now in the area of teaching is engaging in the letters, because we've talked about Acts, but I want to set the framework for that. We talked about those first 14 chapters, the first 12 chapters of Acts. And, you know, these are, the letters are God's narrative about action. Okay, so you've got the whole Old Testament, you've got the Old Covenant, and it laid a foundation, and it all laid a foundation for Messiah, and Messiah came, and we saw him face to face, and we have the story of the Gospels, because we see what he did and what he taught. And then in the wake of that, these letters began to be written, because now it was being processed in a different way. It wasn't just the 12 disciples or the 11 disciples, it was spreading out into the entire world. And so consequently, adjustments were being made, and that's why these letters were being written. Basically, they were looking back primarily at Jesus, and then looking back at the law, and looking back at Moses and Abraham, and going, this is what this means to us. Now, there's also a real craziness happening, because when it was all contained inside of Jerusalem, there was a lot of, Jewish control over the whole thing. But now, all of a sudden, we have the church staging up in Antioch, and it's headed toward being a Gentile church that is going to include people from every nation under heaven. And so we talked about the birth of the church, chapters 1 through 2 in Acts. We talked about the testing of the church, and this is where Stephen was martyred, and the different tests that they had. I need to check my dates, but I think James died during this time too. Not the James that wrote the book, but you know, Peter, James, and John that went up to the mountain. I think right in this time frame right here, I think that's when Herod killed him. In fact, I think it precedes that whole situation where Peter was in jail, and I think the reason the woman that answered the door. They didn't believe her that Peter was at the door. They thought he was dead meat. They said, like James, he's at the door. It's got to be his ghost, right? Okay, so there's this tremendous testing that's going on. I don't know if you feel like you're being tested right now. I feel like we are being tested as a culture, as a world culture. I feel like there are interesting persecutions that are happening, not necessarily just to believers, but it will be interesting to see. And when I try to tell my grandkids who have missed, you know, their graduations and all the different things, I try to explain to them is that you're living in a very unique time in history. Even though it's a difficult time in history, it's probably one of the most exciting times that a person can be alive. And you can go over to look at what happened in Ephesus if you want to see what crazy excitement looked like. Well, I think we're headed for that. I think we're headed for those kinds of things. And so you got the birth, you got the testing, then you have the persecution and Saul's conversion, and then you've got the whole vision of the sheet and the idea that, you know, Peter needed to understand, Peter, James, and John, pillars of the Jerusalem church, they needed to understand that the gospel was going to go to the Gentiles. And so that happens, and then we bump into the missionary journeys, which happens in chapter 13. So I have a question for you. I'd like you to grab your Bible. And I'll give you a couple minutes to think about this, but in 13 through 15, three chapters, so I want you to look at them. And I want you to share with me something remarkable. Something remarkable in those three chapters. Just to kind of look at it and page through it or scroll through it, however you do it. And what do you see as the church begins to unfold and explode into the Gentile world? What kind of things do you see there that you think are remarkable? Dennis.
One of the first things that it's right at the beginning of chapter 13, verse 1, it says, now they were at Antioch, this place in the church. It was there prophets, teachers, Barnabas was there, who knew about Simeon, who was called Niger, Lucius, Cyrene, Manaen, who had been brought up with Herod.
Yeah.
I thought, instead of in my margin, I wrote, Herod's playmate.
Yeah.
I mean, the opportunity for Herod to have responded, I got to believe was there. And it's just, God doesn't leave anything or anyone to chance.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to being in heaven and hopefully seeing replay video of him being eaten by worms. Yeah, you know what you're recognizing there is that there are some Gentile Greek names in there. In fact, often it'll talk about their Jewish name and it will talk about their other name because they came from other nations, and even though they had Jewish roots. Okay, good. Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. What else do you see in these three chapters? You need to get up for this because this is how we're going to do the letters. So, you know, you'll have more preparation next time, but what do you see that's remarkable?
Well, I was thinking about the magician that was trying in the same chapter, was trying to work his way in, but then he denies it. And thinking, I've thought in the past about how so much parallel to our world. People are trying to go into the faith, the true faith, but they're not willing to really confess and submit themselves. They're trying to, I don't know where they've got to manipulate things so they can kind of sneak in and be part of self-fulfillment and so much part of mankind.
Yeah.
Fulfilling yourself.
Yeah, you've heard the saying, follow the money. This is one of the biblical roots of following the money. And I mean, you think about even some of the things we're experiencing right now. Follow the money. And that's what was happening here. You know, profit. People want to make profit. They want to make profit off from things that are happening. And so they twist the truth, which is what this magician wanted to do, which is what's happening all the way through the book of Acts. Because if it's an opportunity, we want to maximize it. Okay. Anything else you see that's remarkable in these three chapters?
Towards the end of chapter 13, I was thinking of in the early days of what was in KZCQ, and we had that song by Plum talking about a God-shaped hole in all of us. Mm-hmm. We know that that's why everyone's searching. A lot of them are searching. People are searching in the wrong place. But everyone is searching because God has built down a fullness. And in 42 and 43, it talks about Paul and Barnabas are teaching. But then what's amazing to me is in 44, where it says, on the next Sabbath, almost the whole city gathered to hear the word of the Lord. And people were hungry, and they heard the truth, and they responded to it.
Yeah. Often, the apostles would show up on the edge of the city at a place of prayer or whatever, and then all of a sudden this explosion would begin to happen because neighbors would talk to neighbors, would talk to neighbors, and then all of a sudden the whole city would be gathering to hear from these guys. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable, really. Anything else? Yeah, yeah. And the opposition. Yeah. Yeah. What we're experiencing right now is way deeper than churches being limited and meeting together and whatever. I mean, you know, there's an antipathy between good and evil that is kind of beyond our imagination about what it is. And that's basically what we're seeing beginning to be represented more overtly in our culture. Yeah. We haven't talked about 15 yet, right? It's one of the most exciting chapters. I mean, the Jerusalem Council, who could not be excited just thinking about Jerusalem Council? Look down at verse 13. After they had stopped speaking, James, this is the brother of Jesus who will write the book of James, but he hasn't written the book of James yet, but he's going to write it. After they had stopped speaking, James answered saying, "Brothers, listen to me. Simon has related how God first concerned himself about taking from the Gentiles a people for his name." And then he says, and appeals to the prophets, like we talked about earlier, "Just as it is written, after these things I will return, I will rebuild the tabernacle of David, which has fallen. I will rebuild its ruins, will restore it, so that the rest of mankind may seek the Lord. And all the Gentiles who are called by my name, says the Lord, who makes these things known from long ago." And then he goes on and he gives his judgment. So the reason I'm bringing these three chapters up is we're going to look at the books of James and Galatians next, because they're the first letters that were written. And they were written in the context of how the gospel was unfolding in the book of Acts in these very events. And what James is going to do is he's going to look at, you know, he's in Jerusalem. Paul comes, gives his report. And what's the report all about? This happened. This happened. Some of the miraculous things that you were just discussing, all of these things happened. And the apostles who were in Jerusalem, what could they say? It had to be the power of God. They'd just seen the power of God from Jesus, through Jesus, and now they were seeing that same power carried out among the Gentiles. What did the Jews want to have happen right away? The Jewish representatives. Well, these people have to be circumcised. If they're not circumcised, they can't be in the kingdom of heaven because of what the law says. And that's where the book of Galatians comes in. So to read James and Galatians in the context of what was happening is incredibly important, and it's important for all of the letters. If you put them in the context of where they unfold in the story, and as you read the book of James, you have to think about this guy who grew up with the Son of God for his older brother. You have to think about that when you read James. And you have to think about the devotion that you saw in the early church. I mean, you think Peter and James and John were targets, which they were. And as far as we know, James was the first one that was picked off. Think about what targets the family of Jesus would have been, because they were so woven into the story. And then especially because you've got James who's stepping up, and he's standing in the city of Jerusalem, the Jerusalem church, and he's taking a stand. So when you read the book of James, you have to remember who's writing the book, what the context of his experience is, and what he's trying to communicate. I was reading James this week, and I'm going, oh my gosh. It's a book all about not only trusting God and what real faith is, it's a book about humility. I'd never noticed it before. I mean, I'd seen the passages, but it's woven all the way through. That humility is a key thing that James was trying to express. And even though his book is very direct and very sharp, and a lot of people have disagreed with it through history, faith without works is dead. How much more direct can you get than that? So as you investigate with me the book of James and then the book of Galatians, we're going to spend 2 weeks on the book of James and then 2 weeks on Galatians. And what I'd like you to do is make a commitment in your heart to actually interact with those two books. Not just wait for Dave to talk about it, because one of the first things I'm going to ask when we get together is these questions. When you go to the book of James, and this is a big mistake a lot of Christians make, and especially second and third generation Christians make, is they don't go expecting personal revelation. You know, it's like, yeah, blah, 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 Jesus, blah, 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 the Bible, blah, blah, blah. I've heard it all my life, okay? But this is talking about revelation, personal revelation, experiencing personal revelation. And that's one of the first things that you want to do before you read the Bible. Even if you're only reading it because you think you're supposed to, you open it up and you pray for personal revelation. God, I want to hear from you. I want me to hear about you. And you know, God is so amazing because he's able to do that for anybody who asks. The second thing is that you want to get good at articulating something that you observe. The things that people just shared, those are good ideas. Those are good observations. That was on the fly, right? That was off the cuff. But what's going to happen when every one of us spends 15 minutes or spends 30 minutes or an hour and we're looking at it and we're asking the same question, what's the personal revelation? What are the things that I'm observing as I read this book? And then the third thing, formulate questions that you'd like to answer. Because, you know, I'm like the Bible answer man, right? I can answer your questions, right? But what you got to love about me is that if I can't answer a question, you know what I do? I don't know the answer to that. Let's go look. Let's go find it together. So formulating questions that you wish to answer as you read it, as you go through the book of James. And then finally, and I can't study the Bible without studying this way. You know, like when I was looking at Dagon this morning and yesterday, last night as I was going to sleep, it literally amazed me. Not just the fact that the statue fell over two times, but it amazes me that God is so creatively involved, and that if I call on God, God is going to act just as much in my life as in anybody else's. So anyway, those are just some things to be thinking about. Pray for personal revelation. We'll go into the book of James, assuming you come back next week. I mean, you might not. You might go, this isn't for me. That's okay. And then articulate something that you observe. Be ready to articulate it, not just in the group. You know, you can walk up to somebody. This is amazing how this works. If you walk up to somebody and you say, hey, especially a fellow believer, you walk up to them and you say, I was just reading in the book of James this week. I think this is amazing. You know what usually happens? Conversation begins to happen between believers. And all of a sudden you're talking about things above, not things below. Can you get together with any group of people right now and not talk about COVID? Okay, but what got bumped? COVID got bumped. Now what are we talking about? You know, we are the quintessential shiny object. You know, we're like children, aren't we? It's the next thing, it's the next thing, it's the next thing. We're going to be obsessed with something. It's the nature of how we're made. We're made in the image of God. We're made to learn. We're made to experience. We're made to process. But we were made to glorify God. And so, if that's what we're made to do, how can we fulfill that in a way that's pleasing to God? So that's what I'm asking. It's going to take literally about 8 or 9 months to go through the letters. But we're going to take a couple weeks on each one and give you an opportunity to know what's coming. And then you can look at the posts, and there's a post on spiritual rain. There's also a post on things praying right now. I've taken those things from catalyst.city and laid them out related to what we're experiencing right now. So that's in that post. And then there's a post that we put up last night, that Daniel put up last night, on James, the plain truth. And he's speaking the plain truth to us about what it means to live in a world that is really going crazy. Because that's what the Gentile world was doing at the time that the church was birthed. The world was going crazy. And again, if you don't believe it, just read the rest of the book of Acts. Just read what happened in Ephesus. Ephesus is more normal for what was going on as they travel. Acts chapter 19, Acts chapter 20, you know. So, voila.